Barbie and Friends, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. Today we have John Toomey, who is with the Greenwich Library, and he is part of the Oral History Project. So, John, welcome.
Thank you, Darby.
All that good stuff. Tell us a little bit about the Greenwich Library Oral History Project.
Well, we've been around since 1974. In honor of the 1976 bicentennial, they formed the Oral History Project to record interesting stories that put together, produced a great long picture of Greenwich people and places and its history. And they originally were started out, as I said, 50 years ago. So some of the people who gave the first interviews have long since left this veil of tears, but were very fortunate to have their recorded impressions at the time, because they really took us back to the end of the 19th century, some of these people. And we have about 2,000 interviews, and a lot of them are bound in books, which you can find at the library. The transcript of the interviews is what I mean. You can't really easily listen to the interviews. You'd have to make an appointment. You'd have to say exactly who you want to listen to. You can't just go in and push a button, in other words. But that is possible if you'd like to hear the original. I don't think I've ever mentioned that before. So for people who are interested in Greenwich history and are writing about it, it's a very valuable resource. And we've got a lot of volunteers who are at work on the project on the first floor, right behind the lending desk area. We have a nice, beautiful office there, so stop by sometime if you're interested in learning how to interview people, or if you want to index some of our interviews, meaning take the names and the places and what page they appear on. If you like that kind of detail work, we'd more than welcome it. And that's the project, Darby.
Okay. So who and why did you choose the person we're doing today?
Well, every time I go to the drawers to find something interesting to pull and discuss on the radio, I come across this name, William Finch, and he was a historian and also a very, let's say, erudite, detail-oriented guy who had a long, impressive memory of events and who knew personally a lot of people throughout his life. He knew just about everybody there was to know in Greenwich in his day, and he also knew a lot of those people's dads, who were sort of as I mentioned earlier, 19th century, early 20th century fellows, women as well, who inhabited the town. And he himself, for a while, lived in what is now the Bush Holly House, just as sort of a caretaker, and he would curate, and he was the go-to guy if you wanted to know about Greenwich in those days. And he was also a part of the Greenwich Historical Society, and as such, was quite an expert on the town. Today, we're going to read a talk that he gave in January of 1974 to the Historical Society that was in our oral history files. And I thought it was rather interesting, so I'll start, okay?
Yes?
This is William Finch. He starts out, I'm going to talk, as I did last year, on some of the people who built this town. Some of the early New York commuters who had millions of dollars, who built beautiful places and had a part in the building of this town. I want to start off with Ernest Thompson Seton, who once came to Greenwich, about 1900, and boarded in the Holly Inn, which is our Bush Holly House today. When Coss Cob was an early summer art colony, and Mr. Seton stayed at the house. And one of the games that these artists and writers who discovered Greenwich in the 80s and 90s played at the dining table in the back room at the Bush Holly House was called real estating. And if you're really interested to go into that, you can read Lincoln Steffens' autobiography put out in 1930. And he was one of the frequenters of the Bush Holly House before he bought a place on Club Road in Riverside. And one of the games they played after they had their dinner was called real estating. And they would read the real estate ads in the local paper that came out about once a week. Probably at that time, there were two real estate dealers in the town of Greenwich. Today, there's many more. In fact, for the last few years, and this is, remember, in the early 1970s, I've had the privilege of addressing all of the new real estate agents under the auspices of the Greenwich Real Estate Board. And I'll talk to them in March of this year, 1974, and I understand they've got 70 new recruits this year. But in the old days, back in the 1890s, there weren't too many here. In fact, they were probably just farmers who owned a great deal of land who were trying to develop their own land and sell it in parcels. But one of the games they played here at Bush Holly House was real estating, and the whole idea of the game was this, that you could go out and look at all these lovely farmlands in the back, in Coss Cob, North Greenwich, all over town. And, of course, you had to use a horse and buggy to get there, horse and wagon. And you would look at these things, and as long as you could resist buying that particular property for $3,000 or $4,000 for 100 acres, you were in the game. But the minute you bet and bought a piece of property, you were completely out of the game. So this wasn't really a game. This was for real. This was real money. And one of the people who was out of the game very shortly was Ernest Thompson Seton. And he bought a large farm here in Coss Cob on Orchard Street and developed it as Windigo. And of course, as you know, he was a foremost writer, naturalist, and artist. That pronunciation is Windigo. He was the founder of the Boy Scout movement here in Greenwich. In fact, there is a wonderful collection of his books and drawings that the Bruce Museum has quite a collection of on a very good permanent display in one of the rooms. Mr. Seton developed his Windigo property on Orchard Street here in Coss Cob around 1903. I would say 03 or 04. And he claimed, and I think he was right, that the original Indian village of Petacapan, which was the original name for Coss Cob back in the very early days, was the site of the Indian village that was massacred, burned by the combined forces of the Dutch and English back in 1644. And he used to be able to point out where it was. And I think he was probably correct. That name, that Indian village was Petacapan, I believe. That's how you pronounce it. Petacapan. So later, he bought property up on Lake Avenue, between Lake Avenue and North Street. And there, he lived for many years before he went to Santa Fe, New Mexico. But he had a long association with the house, and his daughter, Anya Seton, is one of our trustees and now a former officer. And she, some years ago when we started restoration of the Bush Holly House, restored our lovely old doorway in memory of her mother and father. Now, I remember Ernest Thompson Seton. He was a good friend of my father's. And I remember him quite well, mainly when I went to the Edgewood Summer School up on Glenville Road in Greenwich. And every year at that particular summer school, Ernest Thompson Seton would stage what they called a council ring. And it was sort of a permanent setup because it happened every year, once a year at Edgewood. And Mr. Seton would come down. All the children were awed by his appearance. He was a tall man and had very bushy iron gray hair at that time. And we would build a great big fire of logs in the center of this council ring. We sat around it on benches, and he always started the fire by rubbing two sticks together. And in the early days, I thought maybe he had a safety match under the table or something like that, but he didn't. And what ignited the spark of these two sticks rubbing together was a mouse's nest, a field mouse. Yeah. He'd always
very never be a Boy Scout.
He'd always find a field mouse's nest, and that would ignite the fire. That was a great night every year at Edgewood. Ernest Thompson Seton, who was a naturalist, loved skunks.
Oh, skunks. Well, on that, I hear my music playing. Oh. We need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll find out more about Mr. William Finch and his really interesting stories about all of Greenwich at a particular time. You're listening to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. Welcome back to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com. Anywhere. Today we have John Toomey, our wonderful, wonderful oral history project friend who comes that's connected with the Greenwich Library. And today we're hearing about Mr. William Finch. So please continue, John.
Okay. He loves skunks, this Ernest Thompson Seton. In fact, when anybody for years in the town of Greenwich found a wild skunk in their garage, they'd call Ernest Thompson Seton. And he'd sneak up in back of it and say, kitty, 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 you know, and pick it up by the tail. It didn't bother him at all. But he did raise skunks, and before he went to New Mexico, he gave my brother and myself our first pair of skunks. When he went to Santa Fe, he gave us the remainder of his skunks. But he was a great man, and I'd like to think that those of you who've been in the library here at the Bush Holly House upstairs, that little south room we have under a globe, a glass globe, we have a collection of birds of Greenwich. And there's many birds not represented in that globe because we've accumulated in our area today many birds that were not here in 1900. But we know that the globe of birds was given to Mr. McRae and Emma Holly when they were married in 1900. Although I don't know who gave it to them, I'd like to think that Seton did it because he was an expert preserver of birds. But that is one thing we have, and I do think that Mr. Seton did give that as a wedding present. Now another, I'm skipping around in time.
Yippee for a wedding present, good Lord.
Yeah, that's over the top. This goes before Mr. Seton, and the next man is Amasa A. Marks. And he was the Well, he bought old land in Old Greenwich and developed what is now Willowmere, the Willowmere section of Riverside, and that was his home. And he came to Greenwich in the late 1860s. He was very active in town affairs. I think he was on the board of selectmen for many years. But he made his name by developing artificial limbs, wooden legs, wooden arms. And the business is still in business, although he's been gone for many years. Prosthetics is what we call them today. He had a tally-ho coach that he would go around in to look at the trees. And I've heard my father tell this. I remember seeing him going around the town in his tally-ho, and the very best wood for artificial limbs was sycamore or white wood and buttonwood. And he would go around and he would say, he was up in Stanwich in his tally-ho, he'd point out to his coachman or footman on the coach to get down and make a mark on the tree or to go on in and see the owner of that particular property and make a deal for it. Probably gave $20 for this 100-year-old tree on average. And then later they would go back and harvest it, and it was taken into New York City, and it was made into artificial limbs for people. This company is still in business, and they go in now for all sorts of plastic materials, of course. But Mr. Marks, when he moved to Riverside in the late 1860s, well, it was just about that time that Jeremiah Atwater was developing what is now Riverside, and they wanted a railroad station in Riverside, and they got it. Then Mr. Marks, because he was a little closer to Old Greenwich, about 1881, they wanted a station, another stop in Old Greenwich, just about where the station is today, a little bit west. But the New Haven Railroad Company would not have another station so close to the Greenwich station with the name Greenwich. And it was Old Greenwich. And Mr. Marks came up with the name Sound Beach. And that was accepted by the New Haven Railroad. And they did get their station about 1882, something like that. And it remains Sound Beach. So that's how we got some of the few things that are still called Sound Beach in Old Greenwich. And it remained Sound Beach up until about the middle 1880s, the train station. The middle 1880s until about 1930, when Mrs. Kitchell, who was then a member of the state legislature, a member of the Old Greenwich Garden Club, and her members thought it would be nice to get rid of Sound Beach and go back to Old Greenwich. And that was finally done. It was an act of the state legislature through Mrs. Kitchell and the Old Greenwich Garden Club and voters in Greenwich. So in 1930, we went back to Old Greenwich Station, town. While I'm talking about the Kitchell, I'll say that there are many families who have been here for many years who have carried on the traditions of their forefathers who came here. And one of the great families in this town has been the Binney clan. And Mrs. Binney was the founder of the Greenwich Historical Society. They came to Old Greenwich, bought some land on what is now Binney Lane in the late 1880s. First, they just came up summers from New York and camped out in a little shack off the cliff where the later house was built. And they made quite an important contribution to the town through the years they've lived here. The present house, it's now been sold, but it's on Binney Lane. It's on a beautiful cliff overlooking Greenwich Cove or the Tomack Cove area of Long Island Sound. The first one was just a summer shack. And then there was a house, a Victorian-type house, built in the 1890s, and that burned. And the present house is still there, no longer owned by the Binney family. That was built a little after 1900, after the earlier house burned. But it's all on that same site. But Mr. and Mrs. Binney were very active in the First Congregational Church which is our oldest parish in the town of Greenwich, and in the memory of their son, they gave the June Binney Memorial Parish House back around the late 1920s. And they were instrumental in supporting and building the Perrott Library in Old Greenwich.
Ooh, wow.
As I said earlier, Mrs. Binney was the founder of the Greenwich Historical Society and first president, and remained so for 16 years. Now, I myself was on the board while Mrs. Binney was still president, and we had two rooms in the Perrott Library on the ground floor, which we restored through Mrs. Binney's work. And they were open by appointment and on the first and third Thursdays of each month. But we did collect things. We did get up to about 200 members, in fact. One of the highlights being on Mrs. Binney's board of directors of the Greenwich Historical Society was her buffet suppers at board meetings, and they really were nice. She had about four a year, and I remember the first one when I was first elected to the board when I was quite young, and it was the only time that I ever talked to Mr. Binney. But after the board meeting, they had a wonderful collection in the dining room, and it was my first introduction to sparkling Burgundy. And I believe that was a misprint. It's Cotillion in the dining room. And it was my first introduction to sparkling Burgundy. And I've loved it ever since. And Mr. Binney was right at my left. And he was pouring in my glass all evening after the board meeting. I've never forgotten it. He was dead within 3 weeks.
Oh, no.
But I'm still alive. And sparkling Burgundy still agrees with me. In addition to...
Oh, my God, I can't believe he said that he was dead in 3 weeks.
But it still agrees with him. In addition to what they did for the church and the library, they also gave us Binney Park, which is one of the great parks in Greenwich. And it was Mr. Binney's, I think, own idea, or maybe it was spurred by his daughter, Helen Kitchell. But anyway, they developed a swamp into a beautiful park, and they gave it to the town. One more thing before I stop about the Binneys. While I was still in those early days on the board, in the mail one morning I found a notice for a board meeting in Florida of the Historical Society with a check enclosed for $100 for a four-day house party at the Floridian down in Fort Pierce, Florida. And that was really quite a party. And in those days we had, Eben Putnam was on the board. He was the head of the gas company. Wilbur Peck, our first selectman, was on the board. Judge Knapp, judge of probate, and some other important people. And we all, about 15 of us, went down there to Florida for the house party, and it was quite an event. And I don't know what the membership got out of Mrs. Binney's days in office, but the board certainly had a wonderful time. Now,
appreciation.
I'd like to talk about Edmund G. Converse, who was the founder and builder of Conyers Manor out in the Banksville area, Sandwich area of Greenwich. And he started this fabulous estate back in the late 1890s. About 1895, I think, he started and developed this tremendous estate. And I think there are something like 1,600 acres. And, of course, it's been a great fight through zoning for years because the current owner would like to develop it into smaller lots. And someday, I think it's going to happen. Remember, this is 1974, folks.
Right.
But it hasn't happened yet. But back in the 1890s, Mr. Converse, who was a very important financier in New York, started to buy up farms in the Banksville Sandwich area and developed this manor. And it was completed, I would say, around 1906. And he died in 1920. But he bought up small farms and created this vast estate. He employed 500 men. He had his own fire department and his own private lake, which is larger in spring and summer than in the dry months. And he imported workmen from Europe to carve his beautiful stairways in the manor house. And while he was never too active in town affairs, his main interest was creating this vast estate. It was one of the greatest in the country. His main interest was raising fruit, mainly apples, peaches, pears, and smaller fruit.
And on that one, John, that is out of time. But you'll have to come back and tell us the rest of it. Mr. Converse Farm, which is
we'll see you next month, Darby. Thank you.
Absolutely. You take care. Thank you for coming. That was John Toomey from the Greenwich Library Oral History Project. You've been listening to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.